This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Good afternoon and welcome to Federal News Radio. This is Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch. We just thank you for coming by our show today. We're going to be talking about some recent things that's been going on. Recently, we had an earthquake in the D.C. area that really caught everybody off guard. And it sounds as if we are going to be going into hurricane season. And we need to talk about this, about how should we be prepared? I mean, with all these things happening, you know, what should we be doing? Will there be another earthquake that's going to hit our area? Should we be concerned about that? How bad were hurricanes? Season B. What should we do to make sure that when these things do happen, we are not caught off guard? Today, we're talking to the president and CEO of the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety, Julie Rochman. She's on the line with us right now. I think, Julie, you're out in Tampa. Is that correct?
I am, but I lived in D.C. for 25 years.
Outstanding. So you know the area well.
I do.
You know, this recent earthquake that we had here really caught. I know I was at Quantico when it happened and down at the Marine Corps base and in a meeting, and it caught all of us completely off guard, this whole area. You know, what's going on? I mean, is this going to be something that we need to really start thinking about on the East Coast? We usually think about it in California or maybe overseas somewhere, but we haven't thought about it on the East Coast or the Midwest as much. What should we be thinking about right now?
Well, it's an interesting question, Derek. I was actually in Richmond when the earthquake hit, and I didn't even feel it.
Wow.
But I know a lot of people were really freaked out. It's important to understand that the earthquake can happen anywhere at any time. There are fault lines all over the planet. This is a very much a living planet that we're on. And the big fault lines have been mapped. I mean, there's been a lot of activity there before. So as new hurricanes as new earthquakes happen, we'll find newer faults, more active faults. But there is some significant earthquake activity in this country, far away from California. The largest earthquakes recorded in the country's history were actually 200 years ago, and they were along the New Madrid Fault, which is near Memphis and St. Louis. There's also a fault line that runs from New Jersey straight into New York City, right at the beginning of Harlem. And the Charleston area is a very active area for earthquakes as well. So the earth does move from time to time in small ways. I think what we experienced in the D.C. area and the Northern Virginia area this week was unusually large, but I don't think it's something that we should expect to see a lot more of.
So in this area, I mean, you know, as you mentioned about fault lines being all over the place. A lot of people don't even really think about that the earth has these different fault lines. And I know that there's been the shakeout movement, the shakeout.org and other things like that. They've been doing a lot of preparation in the Midwest just in case of earthquakes because of that that historical earthquake that was very, very devastating a long, long time ago. You know, as we think about this, should we be prepared, or should we just look at this as kind of a passing fancy? Or, I mean, where should our minds be right now?
Well, I think the more immediate threat in the Mid-Atlantic region is hurricane.
Okay.
You know, we know from doing research that you can only talk about so many things that are scary before people's eyes just glaze over and they freeze.
Okay.
So I think what we try to get people to do is pay attention to the types of risks that are most common in their areas. It doesn't mean that something else couldn't happen. It just means if you tried to build your house or build your life around the things that may happen, you could make yourself crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So what we want to teach people is that there are some very simple things, oftentimes not expensive things, that they can do to take a little bit more control over their lives. But Mother Nature ultimately is going to have the last say.
And, you know, as you're thinking about it, and I know on your website, disastersafety.org, you have some great resources for people because you cover a lot of different risks. What should people be thinking about as it relates to earthquakes? And I agree with you. I mean, a lot of times as I look at all the different risks that are out there, whether it be floods or high winds, you know, hurricanes, everything else, it's so scary that it's overwhelming sometimes. But when it comes to the earthquake scenario, if just in case it does happen in this area again, or other people are listening across the country, what should you do to risk, you know, to kind of reduce the risk?
Well, we put together a list of 7 things that people can do, or actually 6 things people can do, for less than $70.
Okay.
So a very simple earthquake risk reduction program for less than $70. And
okay.
It starts with your water heater. For about $25, you can grace your water heater. And this is important for several reasons. If the water heater moves because of earth movement, you could break pipe and have a lot of water damage in your home. Or if it's a gas-powered water heater, you could interrupt the gas supply and there could be a fire. So strapping down your water heater, which is very inexpensive, can save a lot of headaches. And also, by the way, if your house starts being shaken around by a windstorm and your water heaters break, that can cause a problem. So that's the first thing to do. And then we have other things like wall-mounted flat-panel televisions, securing your drawers and bookcases and mirrors and fluorescent lights, just to make sure that these things don't fall on people or otherwise cause injury.
You know, and you hit the water heaters, and then you kind of talk about, I also see something about gas lines. I mean, you know, some people are definitely, you know, is there a concern that a gas line or something like that may pop and then cause, like you said, cause a fire, or, you know, poisonous gas may start infiltrating the house?
Yes, absolutely. Gas lines and water lines are things that if anybody owns a home or is in an apartment building, you want to make sure you know where the main water and main gas shutoff valves are, so that if there is a storm or a quake and those things are disrupted and you see, you know, water spraying out or you can smell a gas leak, you want to be able to call the people who control the gas and water. But if there's a lot of devastation, they may not be able to get to you very quickly. So knowing where the shutoff valves are is very important. Never turn them on, but it's good to turn them off.
Always know how to turn this stuff off. If you live in, you need to know these kind of things. I also see on here about kind of securing cabinets and drawers and kind of securing bookcases. I don't think people think about that a lot, about maybe a bookshelf, or, you know, people could be sitting somewhere and something falls on them and basically kills them.
Yeah, it's interesting because earthquakes are kind of the opposite of hurricanes in that regard. With an earthquake, a little bit of movement, a less severe earthquake, you're going to see damage on the inside of structures.
Mm-hmm.
On a hurricane, a little bit of wind and water, you're going to see damage on the outside of structures. So for earthquakes, and this is what you saw from the pictures in the Mid-Atlantic region this week, a little bit of earth movement, you see shelves falling over, bookcases falling over, things falling off of shelves, and that's how people get hurt, is they're inside and something falls on them. So securing pictures and mirrors and television sets and things that are on the walls so they stay on the walls, and bookcases so they don't fall on top of people or block exits, that's very important.
Right. You know, I think when we saw the kind of, you know, small kind of devastation here, you know, a couple of buildings, you know, do you think that the building codes were safe enough in the area? I mean, you know, I didn't really see a whole bunch of buildings kind of collapse or a lot of structure. We did say that, hey, there's some structural damage with the Washington Monument. There's some structural damage or other things. But did that also kind of a vindication that this area has some strong building codes?
Well,
Or is it the category earthquake that we had just was not that strong where it didn't cause that kind of damage?
Yeah, I think the earthquake that you felt was not all that severe. It was
okay.
A good-sized quake. I mean, let's not minimize it too much. A 5.9 is a pretty good-sized quake, but it's not a huge quake like we saw in Chile or in Haiti or in Japan or we've seen out in California. So, you know, being prepared is a good thing, but I would hate to have people think that the codes are the thing that are going to save them, because, first of all, an earthquake-related code is designed just to keep the building up long enough for people to get out of it.
Okay.
Building codes are minimum thresholds. They are the legal minimum at which you can build. So we really try to talk about things that are beyond code or voluntary things that people can do to make themselves safer.
Now, it's a key thing when an earthquake happens, and you did see this a lot, you know, people running out the building. Is that the correct, you know, for a person to make sure, if this ever happens again, what should a person do automatically in order to try to, you know, keep themselves and the people around them safe?
That's a good question. And again, shake damage causes things to fall. So the reason people exit buildings is because they don't want either things inside the building or the building itself to fall on them. And that's the appropriate response. People usually will say stand in a doorway, and that's because the load path of the doorway or the frame itself provides some protection, or to crawl under a heavy piece of furniture or like a pool table or something. So if things do fall, that heavy item on top of you will take the brunt of it. But yes, getting outside, going into the middle of the street, where, you know, away from brick facades that might come crashing down, that's a good thing to do.
Is it also, you know, making sure you look around if there's any power lines, trees, or other things out there that could possibly shake themselves? Like you said, kind of going into a very, very open area?
Yes, an open area is good. Bad for lightning, good for earthquakes.
You got to know what disaster you're dealing with.
Exactly.
You have to have a disaster checklist to see which one am I going to be dealing with today. With this whole dynamic, and I want to talk about, you know, going into hurricanes, because, you know, as you said, that's very much so. We're going into hurricane season, you know, across the country, and you know, a lot of different people have done different predictions. Is there a concern that with these fault lines moving, is there some concern that we may experience what we have seen overseas, Christchurch, Japan, other places, of a major hurricane off of one of our coasts, either the Atlantic coast or Pacific coast, that will cause either tsunami or anything else? I mean, I know you deal with this on a regular basis, but is there concern from some experts that we may ever have to deal with something like that?
Ever? It's hard to say ever. Okay. I don't think there's a lot of concern right now that the Atlantic coast is going to be subject to a tsunami. There are tsunami warning systems and plans in place on the Pacific coast because those are more likely out there. I think the main threat that you're looking at right now in the mid-Atlantic region is Hurricane Irene and whatever lines up behind her with regard to other tropical systems. And that's really not so much tsunami as it is something called storm surge, which could be a foot or two of water that comes on top of the normal waves that would be there during high tide. A severe hurricane like Hurricane Ike in 2008, when it came ashore in Texas, brought 18 to 20 feet of water with it. So that's a pretty significant surge. It's not really a tsunami in the same way. They're just different types of waves, but they're both very damaging.
We're going to talk about that. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking to Julie Rochman. She is the president of the president and CEO, I should say, of the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety. They do a lot of work with businesses. They do a lot of work with Homeland Security in terms of research and other things to kind of figure out what's going on and how to deal with disasters, how businesses can mitigate and prevent themselves from being so damaged by disasters, how people can keep themselves safe. Their website is disaster safety.org, disastersafety.org. Listen to Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio on Fair Access with Derek T. Deutsch. We'll be right back after this break.
Cloud computing. Your data and apps must move easily and securely to reach many clouds, not just one. That's why the network that connects, protects, and lets your data move fearlessly through the clouds means more than ever. See how. Cloud Advantage for Government, the Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com, brought to you by Cisco and Intel.
Hey everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, DC's one and only food and wine variety show.
Join us next Sunday, August 28th. We're going to be talking fashion, but not that kind of fashion. Kathy Morgan from Citronelle is pouring wines from fashion houses, and Jeff and Barbara Black will be in studio talking about their latest opening.
That's Foodie and the Beast, live next Sunday and every Sunday at 11, right here on 1500 and 820 AM.
Here's Christopher Lowe, Associate CIO, USDA's Agriculture Security Operations Center, on the Federal Executive Forum on Cybersecurity, sponsored by HP Enterprise Services.
Another challenge is just the overall fluidity, whether it's clouds on the back end or mobility on the front end, the shadow IT of my own personally owned device brought into the agency, or the customers wanting to use whatever it is they're bringing to bear at that time. We need to be able to do what we need to do when we're doing it, and our application development isn't there yet.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezor Media Group, log on to Federal News Radio.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective. And that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys are now training their sights on a new target: exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help governments secure mission-critical applications by designing security in from the beginning, finding the vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. Learn more. Visit hp.com/go/cybersecurity.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Energy Department has just redesigned and relaunched its main website using free open source software. The new edition of energy.gov was designed using the Drupal content management system. The department says not only does it support hosting on a cloud-based back-end infrastructure, it'll also let Energy do a better job of engaging with visitors to the site. It includes new features that give users localized information and resources about saving energy and other topics.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Federal News Radio is a proud partner of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. In the past 25 years, FEA has helped more than 21,000 federal families with over $18 million in aid. By donating just $1 per pay period, you can help federal families keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Keep your CFC dollars in the federal family and make your pledge to FEA 11185 today. Learn more at FEA.org. That's FEEA.org.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Welcome back to Fed Access. We have been talking about what's been going on recently, some disasters, earthquakes, hurricanes. We're right in the season of hurricanes, but we recently had an earthquake. And in the first segment, we were talking about, you know, should there ever be an earthquake again? What should you be doing? So definitely go back and take a listen to that one. But I have Julie Rochman on the line with me. She is the president and CEO of the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety. And we are talking about what's pending on us. We are about to go into hurricane season. And usually with hurricane season, you get at least two, three, maybe four hurricanes coming off different coasts right now. Julie, you know, we got a Hurricane Irene that everybody's concerned about. What should we really be doing to prepare for this? I mean, there's already talked about evacuations on the coastal areas, but people even more inland in certain areas, what should be going on, to prepare us for this?
Well, the good news, if there is any good news when comes talking about hurricanes making landfalls, they come with a built-in warning and preparation period. Meteorologists are tracking the storms very closely, and from about 72 hours down to 24 to 12 hours, people are going to get good warnings about whether the storm's going to hit them directly or not. There's a margin for error there of a couple hundred miles, but it's better to be safe than sorry. So we urge people to start preparing now and at least take a dry run. Even if this particular hurricane doesn't hit, it's still the heart of hurricane season, as you mentioned a minute ago. More storms are going to be lined up behind Irene. It's a good idea to have a plan, to practice executing that plan, know where your family is going to be, where you're going to meet up, what you're going to take with you if you have to evacuate, because if the order comes to evacuate, you should listen.
You know, when you have a hurricane and off the coast and people hear about these various categories, Category 2, Category 3, at what point do we take it very, very serious? I mean, what category is it? Is the Category 3, of course, Category 3, 4, 5, I'm sure we got to take that very, very serious. But what point should a person hear on the news, this is a category such and such, and I really do need to kind of prepare myself and buckle this down right now?
Well, in the area around D.C., building codes are not really as strong as they are in South Carolina, in Florida, and some other states that have been pounded by hurricanes more regularly. So the construction, the quality of construction up there is not really that great when it comes to winds over 100 miles an hour. So if it's a Category 2 hurricane, which means the minimum wind speeds are in the upper 90s, like 98, 90 miles an hour, it's time to go because you're going to see some damage. You're going to have trees coming down. You're going to have power lines coming down. And you don't want to try to evacuate at the last minute because you really want to get out ahead of the storm because you have to travel probably a couple hundred miles to get away from it.
Is that meaning, you know, and I guess the question of it is how far inland do you need to worry about, you know, if it's going to hit Ocean City or going to hit Virginia Beach or hit certain areas off the D.C. coast? How far inland do you need to be in order to kind of say, well, the storm has hit and they took the brunt of it, but now I'm this far in and the winds are now 60 miles an hour or what? I mean, what have we seen?
That's a really good question, and it's going to be totally depending on how the storm is approaching. So that's why you need to pay attention to the emergency operations people. If the FEMA folks or their local equivalent are saying get out, it's because they know the storm is going to come your way. And those warnings and watches and evacuation orders will change as the storm moves up the coast. Because if, let's just stick with Irene for a second, that's the storm that's out there. If she kind of skims along the coast and her outer bands are just soaking and blowing wind over the entire East Coast, then you simply just need to move west.
Okay.
But if she comes ashore, let's say she changes her track and she comes up the Chesapeake Bay or she makes landfall in Virginia and continues inland, then you're not really running inland. You need to run, you know, at a 90-degree angle away from the storm, if that makes sense to you. Because we know that, like, when Hurricane Ike came ashore in Texas, Ike hit the Galveston Peninsula and traveled right up through the center of the country and caused hurricane-force winds as far away as Ohio.
Hmm.
So just running in the same path wouldn't have done anybody any good. You need to, you know, move to the side, get out of the way. So that's why it's really important to listen to the emergency operations people and the meteorologists who are going to say, here's where the storm is coming ashore. It's either going to go back out to sea, or it's going to skim along the coast, or it's going to come ashore, make landfall, and continue driving inland. In any of those circumstances, your evacuation route and how far and where you need to go is going to be different.
You know, you work a lot with businesses and kind of advising them on how to deal. You know, businesses and organizations have employees. When they hear stuff like this, if you're maybe a business owner or you're a president of an organization or a director or something that has people under your care, under your supervision, when you hear about a hurricane coming, and you know, what when do you say, listen, hey, it's time for you guys to go home or, hey, don't come in today because a hurricane is pressing? I mean, in terms of a business decision, about maybe keeping your people safe and not causing people to get stuck on the road or anything else. How do you really kind of prepare for that? I mean, you know, I mean, how many hours do you let somebody go?
Well, I know a lot of businesses in D.C. at least peg their closings or letting employees go to whatever the federal government is doing.
Right.
Which I think is a good way to go because they give this a lot of thought. And that's also going to tell you if the feds are shutting down, they're putting a lot of people on the roads. Right, so then you know that the evacuation corridors are going to be more crowded.
Right.
I think for any business, they need to look at a couple of things. They need to look at preparing their own property to make sure that the business can survive, because about a quarter of all businesses that are shut down by natural disasters don't recover. They don't come back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's really important that business owners,
especially your small businesses, right? I mean, especially
your
boutique shops or, you know, maybe a small restaurant or something like that. They don't
Okay. Their margin for error is much thinner than a large company. So having what we call a business continuity plan, and we actually have on our website a free toolkit on our www.disastersafety.org website. It's called Open for Business. It's a free kit that people can print off or use online, and it basically helps you to make sure you've got information about your key suppliers, all emergency contact information for your employees, because you do want to make sure that your employees are going to be safe. Business can't continue to operate unless the employees are there. In the same way that the employees are rooting for the business because they need the job. So very much preparation in advance for a hurricane is a personal thing. It's also a business thing because the whole community needs to survive and be resilient.
Right. Now, is business survival in this plan, is that the kind of the preparation of saying, hey, listen, because some people will say, listen, we don't want to jump the gun too much, but is business survival, is that what you have on your website? I know you have a section about a hurricane, about reducing the risk, and you kind of talk about, you know, windows and doors and roofs and other things like that. Is that part of the checklist of a business or a home to really start going through and kind of locking it down?
Yeah, it is. The physical plan of a business is very important. You want to take those same sorts of steps to protect the property itself. But more than that, a business is really about people and operations. And so making sure you've got data backups off-site, that if you're out of your building, not because even your building was destroyed, but maybe the roads are blocked or power is out for several weeks, where are you going to work? You know, how are you going to find your employees? Do you have emergency contact information for them? Do you have an alternative work site? And business people and homeowners need to check their insurance policies to see what kind of coverage they have in case they're out of their home or they're out of their business for some period of time. The other thing for business owners is to check their key suppliers. What kind of precautions have they taken? Because even if you're up and running and you've got one or two very important suppliers and they're down, you could be in trouble as well.
And that could very much so affect, you know, your bottom line because you can't supply the people who are your customers. And
exactly.
Then a loss of profits. You made a really, really big a point that I think people kind of forget, but I think it's something that they don't look at this fine print. You deal with the insurance companies a lot. You know, what is the insurance that really will provide somebody the key protection, you know, whether it be a homeowner or a business, the key protection they need to ensure that if they do have a catastrophic event, if a hurricane hits and causes major damage, that they are protected and they can get back on their feet.
Well, there are different, let's start with residences. Let's start with homeowners. You should definitely have homeowners insurance. I always recommend to people that they get replacement cost coverage. It costs a little bit more, but instead of your sofa being worth nothing because you've had it for 15 years, if you have replacement cost coverage, they'll say, oh, we'll get you a new sofa. So having homeowners insurance that you understand what is covered and what is not covered is really important. And this is the time for people to start calling their insurance agents or their companies and making sure they understand what's covered and what isn't. One of the things that is not included in homeowners insurance policies is flood. So rising water, wind-driven water that comes through your roof or your windows is covered typically by homeowners insurance policies. But flood waters, whether it's storm surge if you're along the coast or just water that rises because the ground is saturated, that's not going to be covered by your homeowners insurance. That's covered by a federal program called the National Flood Insurance Program. The good news is a lot of people have that in low-lying areas and places that flood. The bad news is if you don't have it, it takes 30 days for the coverage to kick in. So if you want it for the rest of hurricane season, the time to buy it is now.
It's right now. So you can't get it today and then be covered. You got to wait for 30 days.
Exactly.
Okay. Is that, now, you know, for people, especially in the low-lying areas, I mean, that's kind of, sometimes that's even required. But for people who are more inland, you know, as you kind of go in maybe a little bit more into D.C. and other places, do you recommend that? Do you recommend that people have that flood insurance just in case?
Absolutely. It can flood anywhere from the top of a mountain to next to the ocean.
Okay.
Flood when it comes to groundwater. You think about when sewers back up or you just get those really, really heavy rains in D.C. where the streets start to flood. You know, water can find a way.
Right.
And so it's good to have flood insurance if it's recommended in your area. And again, you can check with an insurance agent and they can tell you. As far as business coverage is concerned, there are all sorts of really good property packages out there for business owners. A couple of things that I always recommend people check is to see what kind of additional living expenses you have for homeowners. That means what kind of financial assistance is available to you if you're out of your home, either because your home is damaged or for another reason, like if the civil authority shut down a neighborhood and you can't get back in. And for business owners, there's something called business interruption coverage. And that will help you, again, if you're out of your business, physical office building or plant is closed for a while. But these are contracts, so it's really important for people to read the contracts and know what's in them. And if they don't understand the language or have questions, talk to your insurance agent or broker.
We're going to take a quick break. We're talking about how to prepare for a disaster, how to prepare for any kind of pending, whether it be hurricane or earthquake or anything else that's going on. These things are real. These things are affecting the D.C. area and also affecting the whole United States as well as the world. You need to know how to make sure that you are ready for this. We're talking to the president and CEO of the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety. She's Julie Rochman. We'll be right back on Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch after this break.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Coming to the Reagan Building, the first vendor-neutral predictive analytics conference for the government. Predictive Analytics World, September 12th and 13th. PAWGov.com. Featuring keynotes from Congressman Darrell Issa and Chairman of the Recovery Board, Earl Devaney, along with case studies from government agencies. This September at the Reagan Building. Learn more at PAWGov.com. That's PAWGOV.com.
I'm like you. I watch the cherry blossoms bloom in the spring. I live amongst monuments and museums. I enjoy walks on the National Mall. Washington, D.C. is my home. This is where I found my career. I am a civilian employee of the United States Coast Guard. That's right, the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard provides me with great workplace training and excellent federal benefits. It allows me to live my life to the fullest. I have time off to travel and have flexible work hours so I can spend time with my family. Coast Guard gives me access to childcare, health and fitness programs, and first-class health insurance, life insurance, and retirement benefits. This is my career. It's how I serve. Find out more about U.S. Coast Guard positions available in D.C. and across the U.S. at CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. That's CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. The U.S. Coast Guard is an equal opportunity employer.
Navy ships are crowded with large metal antennas that can't be hidden or protected when not in use. Engineers are now exploring a unique solution. Since saltwater conducts electricity, Navy electrical engineer Daniel Tam thought,
maybe I can utilize the seawater as my antenna element.
After a trip to Home Depot, Tam connected a device called a current probe to a radio and pumped a vertical stream of water through it.
On the ships, the fire hose easily can generate a stream at least 100 feet in the air.
It worked. Height determines frequency and
I can transfer more information using a thicker water stream.
Just turn the water off and the antennas disappear when not in use. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 AM Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Navy ships are crowded with large metal antennas that can't be hidden or protected when not in use. Engineers are now exploring a unique solution. Since saltwater conducts electricity, Navy electrical engineer Daniel Tam thought,
maybe I can utilize the seawater as my antenna element.
After a trip to Home Depot, Tam connected a device called a current probe to a radio and pumped a vertical stream of water through it.
On the ships, the fire hose easily can generate a stream at least 100 feet in the air.
It worked. Height determines frequency and
I can transfer more information using a thicker water stream.
Just turn the water off and the antennas disappear when not in use. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Federal News Radio. This is Derek Dortch on Fed Access. We are talking about what's going on in terms of earthquakes. We had the recent earthquake that just recently happened in the area. We're talking about what's going on in terms of hurricanes. We've got a hurricane pending upon our coast right now that may cause some impact in this area, may cause some damage. And then we could possibly have several other hurricanes that will be impacting. We're in hurricane season right now. And I'm going to even ask Julie, what is hurricane season? But I'm talking to Julie Rochman. She is the president and CEO of the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety. And we'll find out a little bit more about them as we close out the show. But Julie, with this hurricane season, when we're talking about hurricane season, we're talking about what kind of this time period, kind of going into September, late August, September, up until when?
Well, actually, hurricane season starts June 1st.
Okay.
And it ends November 30th. But the most active part of hurricane season, which is what we're in right now, and you're exactly right, this is the middle of it. The most active part of hurricane season is really about from the middle of August through October.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that a couple of key points in the last segment about making sure that you really understand your insurance coverage, because especially your home insurance. Does that also impact, car insurance and anything else? I mean, do you need to look at that policy as well? Because if floods happen, automatically your car is going to be damaged unless you're at a higher platform or something like that.
Yeah, and actually, flood is something that is covered under auto insurance.
Okay.
There are different types of policies, so you're exactly right. People should read the policies and understand them as best they can. Most policies now come with some very, very clear language up at the front. But if people have questions, again, the time to call and clarify and make sure that you have the right coverage is now, not after an event. And by the way, if people have renovated their homes, they've added a bathroom, or they've bought a bunch of expensive new electronics or something that they haven't told their insurance company about, they should do that, because there's nothing worse than after a disaster strikes having to argue over what your house looked like before there was damage.
You know, and they make a good point about, because people are constantly, you know, investing in new things and adding on new things and adding new property and everything else to themselves. With all of that, as you're looking at insurance, and you know, if you call today, and you guys work with the insurance companies a lot, if a person calls today and then says, listen, a pending hurricane is coming, I want to add on these things to my policy, are those things automatically insured?
If you can talk to the company and you can tell them what it is you want to do, and they'll send you some language back, once the coverage is bound, it is effective immediately.
Okay.
By bound, I mean you've both agreed to what it is you're covering, and there's a premium payment that's been made, then you're covered.
Then you're covered.
With the exception of flood insurance, because that takes 30 days to kick in.
30 days. And for people who are trying to find flood insurance, the site to go to that is what? Do you know?
That's the National Flood Insurance Program.
So just Google that, and the National Flood Insurance Program, and just
exactly.
Google that. Okay, okay. You know, we've had a lot of stuff that happened in D.C. that has really had a very, very strong impact. We had the big snowstorm, you know, that everybody thought Snowmageddon or whatever the case is, and we had all these other kind of things. Is your organization really kind of advocating that companies and maybe agencies and other people set up programs to allow people to do a lot more teleworking in order to kind of keep people still working, you know, and rather than having them come into an office setting when maybe there's something pending going on, whether it be a hurricane or a snowstorm or whatever? Are you pushing for that in any kind of way?
No, not really. We try not to tell businesses how to run their businesses. We try to tell them how to prepare for disaster. Although
okay.
Telecommuting, teleworking is an option, again, if your physical building is damaged. And it's one of the things that we ask in our business preparation, our business continuity program, is what is your alternative going to be if you can't get to work? And remember, there are lots of reasons that people can't get to work. Maybe the public transportation system is shut down. Maybe power is out in a particular area. Maybe there's been some flooding near the business location but not near people's homes. So if you just look at the types of things that are likely, what do you do with employees if they can't get in? Are you going to allow them to work from home? How long? And how are you going to pay them if your payroll system is down? There are a lot of things that businesses need to think about well in advance of disaster, so they're not scrambling when something terrible happens.
You know, you mentioned about small businesses and a lot of them not surviving a major kind of storm. And you know, this area has a lot of small boutique shops and everything else. For that business owner, what is the reason? And maybe in order to prevent this from happening to anybody, but what is the reason that these businesses usually don't survive? Is just the cost of getting the business back operational again? It's just too extreme?
Well, if you let's pick a small restaurant.
Okay.
Okay. So you've got a family-run restaurant, and they don't have a disaster plan. Well, what they may find is if power is out for some significant amount of time, they're going to lose all their fresh produce, and they're going to lose all their other, you know, anything that was in the freezer, meat, dairy, everything. So right there, if they don't have a good insurance plan and a disaster preparation plan for an alternative cooling system, they're going to lose a lot of food. That's a big cost to them. If for whatever reason the doors can't open, their glass is blown in, their door is blocked, they don't have power, now they don't have customers, so they're losing income. If they haven't made provisions for, you know, getting staff to work, if people are trapped in their homes and they can't get them, then you don't have waiters. Whatever it is, if you're missing a core function of your business and you can't make it up, you're probably going to have trouble meeting the same types of profit margins that you have in the past, and that's often what sinks businesses. Or a key supplier can't get to them. You know, if you only have one bakery that you deal with,
right,
that bakery is down, and you specialize in sandwiches, what are you going to do? So people, business owners and managers really need to spend some time thinking about the places and the ways that they're vulnerable and coming up with alternatives to cover those things.
Right. You know, with all of that, does insurance, you know, at a certain level, does it ever, for a business, does it ever provide kind of a loss of income kind of clause to say, listen, we're down for about, you know, 2-3 weeks to a month because of what happened? Are there loss of income clauses that would allow people to, you know, recapitalize on that money while they were down?
Well, commercial insurance policies are a little different than homeowners policies. They're not quite as standardized. Having said that, for very small businesses, typically what small businesses will have is something called the business owner's policy, or a BOP, and it is a somewhat standardized package. But I would really strongly recommend for any business owner or manager who's concerned about their insurance coverage and lost income and, you know, ways to recover when you're out of your physical spot are definitely provided for by the contract. But you need to know, because there are also time limits, And there are things that trigger coverage, different types of events that trigger coverage. So it is really important. I cannot emphasize how important it is that people pull out their homeowner's insurance policy or their business owner's policy or whatever other kind of commercial insurance, property insurance policy they have. Read them. If you can't understand them, call your agent or broker. Ask them questions. Agents and brokers and company representatives love it when clients call and ask them questions so that they can clarify any misunderstanding before disaster happens.
You know, with that being the case, kind of going to the homeowner, do you, in terms of supplies that you should have on hand when, when something strikes, are there certain things that a person says, hey, listen, please make sure you have, you know, this amount of food. Please make sure you have, this kind of equipment. Please make sure you have these things if this happens. I mean, should you have a saw or something to kind of cut trees down? Or what should you have as a package?
Well, that's a really good question. And I think depending on who the person or the family is, different kinds of packages. In other words, if you have somebody who is dependent on medication, you want to make sure you've got at least a 30-day supply of whatever that medication is. If you have someone in your family who's dependent upon insulin that has to be refrigerated, please make sure you have a generator or some sort of a backup plan to keep that medicine cold. Having fresh water to drink, about a week supply of fresh water is important. Having cash on hand, because if the bank teller machines are down because there's no electricity, you're not going to be able to go to your ATM.
Right.
So having some cash stashed someplace.
And what do you think is a good amount? Maybe a couple $100 to have on hand? Or, I mean, what do you think is a good amount to survive? I mean, of course, that depends on how many people you have in your household,
exactly.
Of course. But, I mean, are you thinking, you know, hey, listen, you got maybe a family of three?
I would say at least $500 for a family of three. If you're
going
to be buying everything with cash for a few days, think how much cash you would go through. If you've got a baby, making sure you've got formula or whatever food they need, diapers. If you have pets, making sure you have food and medication for them if they need them. And a carrier, because if you have to leave your house and you've got cats or dogs or other pets, you need to be able to transport them.
Right.
The other thing is, if you're going to look for a place to shelter, if you're going to decide, oh, we're going to go stay with friends in Philadelphia or in West Virginia or whatever, make sure that everything you're going to take with you is going to fit in your car. You have to be able to figure out what's the most important stuff in your house. Key papers. Do you have a file someplace? You should have a file someplace. It's got a copy of your mortgage coupon if you own your home. Copy of your insurance policy, any medical records that you might have in the house, photocopies of credit cards, passports, other key documents. You need to be mobile. So having all of that together in place is very important.
You know, we're going to talk about that. I want to talk a little bit more about kind of, you know, planning just in case of, you know, where you should go and things like that right on the next segment. We're talking to Julie Rochman. She is a president and CEO of the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety. We're talking about what to do about if there's a disaster, an earthquake, a hurricane, or any kind of disaster that's happening that could possibly happen in the area, not only the D.C. area, the DMV, but also around the nation, and if you go anywhere else around the world. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my partner and specialist in family law, Dave Zangrilli, where we're going to be talking about the provocative topic of adultery. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area. For more on the firm, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit myvillagegreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Zymogen and Metagenics.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage. to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few. The proud. The Marines.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit MatrixDirect.com.
Sometimes I worry about what would happen to my family if I lost my job. But I never really thought about what would happen to them if they lost me and I didn't have life insurance. My cousin's husband died, and now she might have to sell her house just to make ends meet. I don't ever want to put my wife through that. So I called Matrix Direct.
Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. If you're 40 years old and married, we could find you a $250,000 policy for less than $16 a month. Call now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-588-5514.
I feel so much better now that I called.
It only takes 5 minutes to see how you could save up to 70%. Call now. 1-800-588-5514. 1-800-588-5514.
Are you ready to explore how consolidation, cloud computing, and mobility are driving change in government? Plan now to attend GuideTech and Affirm's September 15th symposium to learn how 15 agencies are reforming the way they do business. Together, they'll discuss how OMB's 25-point plan is being implemented with leaders at GAO, Veterans Affairs, the Army, DHS, the FBI, and Commerce, among others, as they deliver citizen services across a variety of devices seamlessly. Register today for this half-day symposium at Affirm.org.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we have been having an interesting conversation about what's happening just recently. We just recently had an earthquake. What's happening right now with the hurricane that's pending? How should you prepare? How should you be ready for these kind of situations? We're right in the middle of hurricane season. I just learned something new about hurricane season. What is June to November, and we're right in the middle of it right now. We're talking to the president and CEO of the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety, Julie Rochman. She's on the line with us right now. Julie, you know, we were kind of talking about preparation, talking about kind of what I call a B plan or a Bravo plan for a person who says, listen, I have to leave my home. You know, there's been a significant damage or I need to evacuate or whatever the case is. You know, should you be thinking about this in advance and to say, well, listen, are we going to go to my relative's house in Milwaukee? Are we going to go to maybe more Pennsylvania and go, or are we going to go to a Red Cross shelter? I mean, should people be thinking about this, an evacuation plan already?
Yes, absolutely. People should have an evacuation plan. Living in D.C., I know I lived there during the time of the 9/11 attacks, and we spent a lot of time back then talking about evacuation planning, where we would go and how we would get there. That's a conversation I know a lot of people have had in D.C., and they need to update that conversation.
Okay.
Whether it's a natural disaster or a man-made disaster, knowing how you're going to leave, where you're going to go, where you're going to meet up, and how you're going to find the people you need to find is important, because disasters don't always happen while everybody's at home together.
Right. And I think people really kind of take, I mean, most times disasters, and I know you guys look at the history of it, but a lot of times disasters don't just happen in the middle of the night when everybody's just sleeping. A lot of times they happen in the middle of the workday where, you know, many of your family members are apart from each other. I mean, for some reason, it seems to always happen where you know, most people are either at work or other places and not just together as a unit.
That's true. And you also have to take into consideration there are a lot of college kids who are now, you know, going back to school, who are separated from their families. So people, you know, fortunately now people have phones. Texting, by the way, will be a much better way to communicate after a disaster than cell phone or email. It takes less bandwidth. It's easier. As you may recall, after the attacks on 9/11, the cell phone systems were all clogged.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, making sure you know, again, how to find people, how to contact them so they know you're okay. There are a lot of online services now they're actually offering people you can sign up for, and you can post, you know, here's where I am, and people who need to find you can find you that way.
Right.
But they're only going to find you if you've agreed in advance, this is what we're going to do.
Right. You know, you just made an interesting point about kind of, you know, texting. I mean, because, you know, a lot of people will instantly pick up the phone and call somebody. What you're saying is that if a disaster happens, it's better just to text somebody and say, are you okay? Or the person maybe in that impact area can just send out a blast text to people and say, listen, I'm in the impact area, but I'm okay. And that takes up less bandwidth. And you could probably get that through easier than getting a phone call through.
Yes, absolutely. And internet service will likely be down in some areas, so don't count on, you know, your Facebook page or whatever to update your status. You really need to think about this stuff, which, by the way, goes back to a question you asked earlier, which is in terms of your emergency kit, what should you have? And batteries and a charger are important.
Right, right.
Get one of those standalone chargers that work on batteries so your cell phone will continue to work. That would be important, too, in case you lose power in your house for days or even weeks.
Are those small radios that you can just kind of wind up and kind of generate its own kind of power, do you recommend that those are important to still have right now?
We do. The wind-up radios and wind-up flashlights are both terrific, particularly the weather radios, so that you can keep track of a storm as it's moving through.
Okay, okay. You know, your organization does a lot in terms of preparation. The Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety, you can find it at disastersafety.org, disastersafety.org. What's some new developments that's going on with your organization in terms of, you know, making sure that people are ready for any kind of disasters?
Well, one of the things we've just finished, and actually put some video up on YouTube today on our YouTube channel, looks at what happens when a roof cover, in other words, your shingles, blows off. Because we see that happening in winds of maybe only 70 miles an hour or so. So I expect as Irene comes up the coast, we're going to see a lot of people with older roofs or who've had loose shingles. Those shingles are going to be blown off, or part of their roof's going to become damaged. And water can get into the roof, and even if the house is largely intact, once water gets in and soaks insulation, it can bring ceilings down, it can get into the walls and cause mold, it can soak carpets and rugs and destroy furniture. So the latest test we've done, and it's actually some pretty cool video, shows us putting a full-size duplex of 1,300 square foot, about 750 feet on each side duplex, into our large test chamber, making a hurricane, basically, blowing some of the roof cover off,
right,
and then soaking that duplex with about 8 inches of rain for quite a bit of time. The difference in the two sides of the duplex is that one side has the seams of the roof decking, in other words, the gaps between the pieces of plywood or OSB that make up the base of your roof. We've taped those seams on one side, and we haven't taped those seams on the other, and it's really incredible the amount of difference that about $500 worth of tape can make. And now, if you've got your roof on and you're not going to be re-roofing anytime soon and you're worried about that kind of water damage, you can also go up into your attic and you can use a closed foam cell adhesive and you can spray that along the trusses and the edges of the roof, and that will also form a really nice water barrier.
Thank you so much, Julie, for being on Fed Access. We're going to definitely have you back as hurricane season and all these other seasons kind of approach, because we always get good information from you. But thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Julie Rochman, she is the president and CEO of Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety. Thank you for listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch. We'll see you the next time.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.